Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode is brought to you by you. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade. Today's show is the last of the season and the year. Listeners, get ready, because you know what that means.
What does it mean?
Host show!
What?
Meow, meow, meow. Aaron Foster, Diane Stemple, and I are all here in the studio together, ready for another round. We also have another guest here with us in the studio today, the newest member of our Cutting the Curd family, Liana Kindler. Listeners, if you've wondered how our social media game has gotten so good in recent weeks, Liana Kindler is the answer. Thanks, Liana, and welcome to the team.
Thank you.
Woohoo! Okay, host show. I have some questions for the group, as usual, and Diane will most likely talk about whatever she wants.
Good.
Diane, did you do your homework?
A little.
She has some notes.
A little.
You have more your notes.
This is multiple pages
of
notes.
Like a seventh grader that tore it out of a
just
trapper
to
keeper.
To paint the picture for the audience, these notes have come from a wide-ruled spiral notebook, and they've been torn out. Multiple pages.
Wait, can I see? Is there anything written on it's, them?
It looks like the second page is completely empty.
It is.
It is. Okay.
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 Hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I just
were you
tore
trying
out
to make us think that you had done more?
Right. Was
no,
that
I
like a phantom
I might have taken
page?
Notes during the show and then.
I mean, you might still.
Yes.
Okay.
I might
oh.
still. Wait,
okay.
wait. I'll find my pen.
Okay. Let's start with a cheese question. Let's talk about the present. What cheeses have you been loving these days? What cheeses are you eating, you two?
What cheese are we loving up on?
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't eat that much cheese.
You don't eat that much cheese or you don't taste that much
cheese? I don't eat that much cheese. I do taste a lot of cheese.
See, I knew it.
Yeah, okay. I've been impressed this year. We just started buying some aged Goudas from Chef's Collective.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, who I think is an ex-Murray'site. Is I think direct importing some cool Goudas. There's the Geitsmack. I'm sure
ooh,
I'm not
I
pronouncing
like,
that right.
I mean,
how do you spell it?
Whatever it is, I'm into
Sma-ok.
The name.
Two A's.
Two A's. That's how Diane Sma-ok.
Oh, okay.
It almost sounds Israeli, actually. And then there's the Pu'er. That's two U's on that one. Grand, which is like an aged Gouda. Just very delightful, well-made, well-sourced Goudas. Not a style that I particularly generally go for, but these are quite well done. I honestly, I know we've been kind of hitting them up on social media, but Sugar House Creamery, always a delight.
Yeah.
We got
those cheeses.
A lovely batch of Dutch Knuckle and the pound cake.
Pound cake, I just dream of that cheese. The whole time I was interviewing Margot, I was like, pound
you
cake.
Wanted
I
pound
was like,
cake.
And I should have brought a piece of pound cake here to the studio to nibble
oh,
on.
You should have.
I know.
Today.
Bad planning.
Yeah. Rush Creek was great. We
right.
did, we did one.
That's on my list.
Is mm-hmm. it? Well, I take it back.
This
uh-oh.
This well, season's Rush Creek was amazing.
I don't have a list.
You don't have a list. So
no.
that you did not prepare for this question?
Well, not completely, yes. I thought I would just be extemporaneous.
Well, let's
so,
hear it.
Yeah, extemporize.
Well, I loved a lot of the cheeses that I served at my party.
Diane's famous holiday party happened last weekend. Raucous crowd. Many, many cheeses.
Well,
many cheese people. It was just a confluence.
I had bought cheeses ahead of time, mm-hmm. and then people brought cheeses.
So it was like a cornucopia.
Have a lot of cheese.
There was a three-tiered cheese display on one side of the room.
And that was just all bloomies, right?
There was a blue on there. There was a.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There was that a lovely was, Pyrenees.
And I did hold back Rogue River Blue.
I saw wow. the Rogue. Yes. Wow. Here's what I'll say.
Well, because it came late. Well, it came late.
I watched.
And I think that just says how we rate.
I watched the Rogue River Blue arrive and go quietly into the fridge.
And you made a mental note.
And then also.
That Diane doesn't share. I put your cookies in the.
I baked fresh cookies for the party and Diane kept them for herself and didn't share them with anyone. But she really liked them, you know?
Yes, so. I loved them, and I just finished them last night.
Well, just in time to not bring any to us here.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of it.
Back to the cheese.
Apparently.
Diane, what of this incredible cheese selection at your party, what stood out?
Well, some I didn't even know because they didn't have writing on them.
Sorry, so your answer to this question is cheeses at my party that I don't know what they are.
Yes, that is my answer. Oh no, I'm being exposed immediately. Well,
perfect answer for you.
Like, it's the best, Diane's best moment 2019.
What did you really love this year? I don't know, something somebody gave me once.
That I served to other
people.
Well,
I did like the Rogue River Blue.
That you had later after the party by yourself.
Not that night.
I mean, let's talk about Rogue River Blue for a moment. I mean, what a year.
Yeah.
What a year. Yeah.
And what a cheese.
Yeah. It's won before, though, right? It's won other things?
Other things, but it's never won.
I had, customers.
No, it's won three times, I
Has
think.
It?
Yeah.
The World Cheese Awards?
I think that was the first time that
American
US...
Cheese Society.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But this was the first year that a U.S.-made cheese won the top billing at the
Well, since the 1800s or something, right?
Yeah. What do you even... I don't even know what that means.
I don't know. I learned a fact today.
What?
Not related to cheese at all.
Oh, no.
Oh, what is it?
This episode's off to a great start.
Okay, we don't have. I don't have to tell you my fact.
I want to know the fact.
Now you have to say it.
It doesn't seem like you guys want to know. All right, sorry. President John Tyler.
Okay.
10th president, born in the late 1700s, 1792, I think, 96, more there. He has two living grandsons alive today.
What?
Hmm.
Yeah.
How old are they?
In their 80s.
Wow. Huh.
Wow. How did you come upon that fact?
That must have been multi-generations of late child rearing.
That's exactly right. That's exactly wow. right. John Tyler had a kid at 65, and then that kid had a kid at 75, and now that kid is in his 80s.
Whoa.
That's one way to, like, to...
They
to,
are
that's
late
like,
bloomers.
It's strategic lineage you? Is what it is.
Where
it's
did
like,
you
the internet.
Find
of
this?
Course the internet told
well,
me this.
But how did you get there?
What
I mean,
part of
how
the
did
internet?
You arrive at that?
So let's talk more about cheese.
Okay. All right. Next question.
He doesn't remember.
Wait, and I'm not. I wasn't.
Oh,
done,
you want to
talk?
Right.
And you haven't weighed in either.
Well, yeah. Rogue River and Rush Creek were.
That's true. Rush Creek. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big time. Put. I think I did this last year, maybe the year before. I sort of shamefully talked about putting white truffle on a warm Rush Creek, and
yes.
It was just. We did this again at Thanksgiving this
I'm
year.
I'm thinking of doing it for New Year's, based on your comment from last year, because I have my second
truly
meal
a delight.
Rush Creek.
And it was, you don't have to get a big old white truffle. You're not, for $100, you can get a small 25 gram or something like that, and that's plenty for this purpose.
Oh, delicious.
I also have the new cheeses from Jasper Hill on my list.
Mm. Oh, yay!
They put out a few different ones this year.
Okay.
Oh, the new ones?
Yeah, so I don't know maybe you can tell me how to pronounce it. Eligo? Eligo?
Yeah, how do you say it out loud?
I don't know if anyone has told me.
Well, you should speak to your manager.
We're a radio show, and none of us know the way to pronounce this cheese.
I think it's Eligo.
Eligo.
Oh, thank goodness for Liana Kindler.
Thank you.
Our newest member pulling us up from the dredges.
And the Bridgman Blue as well, I thought was quite lovely. And then I also had the Yumi cheeses, which are sort of a relatively new
I like
importer to the U.S. Mm-hmm. of random Swiss
Do you sell the Belpernol?
We do sell the Belpernoli. Well, I don't know. Yeah, again, the sort of poor man's truffle.
It's good.
Great. It's like so a ready-made cacio e pepe. You don't need a pepe.
Just make pasta and put that cheese on it.
It's perfect.
It's unreal.
It's a good, like, drunk and or hungover, like, easy one-person single meal. Mm-hmm. Like, butter, that cheese, pasta,
it's also
done.
Cute. They've done a good job with the packaging. I think a great host gift, actually, this time of year.
Yep, mm-hmm. It's a good stocking stuffer. Mm-hmm. And I had the Aravasser. Aravasser, which is just sort of like a butter käse, is really
delicious.
Lovely. And the Sanglais de Couardies.
Ooh.
Also very nice.
I haven't had the sanglais.
It's quite good.
Hmm.
Well, you guys are eating a lot more cheese than I am.
So what's going on? Why aren't you
eating cheese? I don't know. I'm deprived.
Throw more parties.
I read books instead of eat cheese.
Are you calling us functionally illiterate?
No. I'm saying that's my job here.
She's referring to her role on the show. Well, I don't think that's really prohibiting you from...
Eating cheese.
You had more cheese at your party than I've eaten all year.
I'm still eating.
You had like over 10 pounds of cheese at your party.
I think so. Everett brought crazy amounts of cheese.
It was great. Now, why didn't you label the cheeses that you did know what they were?
I know why.
That's the reason.
What? Because you didn't know.
She was distracted.
I was distracted, a little drunk, a little this, a little that.
Right.
I was already in the party.
You were already partying?
I was already in the party.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
I sometimes wonder if I should... I never really label cheeses when I put them out at parties.
And then I don't either.
Because I take it for granted that I know what they are. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I feel a little host regret, like... should I have told people what they were eating?
Well, I should have known what they were.
Yes, well, we've determined that.
I always find it frustrating.
I knew what I bought and what I put out
first.
But then the cheese just kept coming in, and it was like, oh, my God.
Right.
That's fair. I mean, you were inundated.
Yes.
I always find it a little bit frustrating when I'm at a party, and I bring cheese, and I set up a cheese plate, and they're like, there's three people at the party, and they're like, whoa, what are these cheeses? And then the next person walks in and is like, walk me through these cheeses.
You just have to keep doing it.
And I'm just like, guys, I'm not going to tell anyone about the cheeses until everyone is here, and I will do it once.
Do one announcement about the cheeses.
Well, are you inviting non-cheese people?
Yeah.
Well, that, yeah.
Or
that
going,
sounds like a,
yeah.
right.
A layman's crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Stupid lay.
Now, James
lay people.
Coogan really helped. I have to put in a
plus. He prepared
plus.
The cheeses for
he
you.
He did it all.
Okay. This is great.
This is of Zabar's?
Of Eli's.
Of Eli's.
Yeah, Upper East Side.
Isn't that, are they associated?
Where has he moved?
Separate store.
Is that where he is now? Okay.
But the, is it, isn't it Eli Zabar?
It's Eli Zabar, but it's not Zabar's.
Gotcha, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
It's a very New York.
Yeah, very New York distinction there. One's on the west side, one's on the east side. important distinction.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, so what type of cheese... would you like to see more of? Is there a type of cheese that you feel like you're not seeing as much? Any unfulfilled desires in your cheese life?
Oh, cheese life.
Gosh, that is hard because I feel like you go to the store and you want them all.
Right.
So I don't really think I need more.
Yeah.
I need to figure out all the ones in the store already.
Mine is sort of not cheese... it's like not cheese specific, but I have one very strong desire.
What is it for?
I don't want to taste the plastic.
I
am plagued by this everywhere. I mean, it requires either a lot of facing and then a lot of waste at the shop. Listeners, if you don't know, face before you taste, my tagline as a monger, which is just shaving off that outer edge of the cheese that's been touching the plastic and then giving your customer a taste of the inner cheese that hasn't been touching the plastic. So, okay, you have that option. You can face it, but then you run the risk of having a lot of wasted cheese. Or you're very high a very high volume turnover shop, it, yeah. so that you're selling the cheese fast enough that it's not actually absorbing the flavor of the plastic.
Now, how long can plastic touch cheese before it tastes like it?
I think it's a couple days.
Oh, a couple days.
You think it's less? Yeah. Maybe 2 days. No, I was going to say like 2 days. You think
in an hour? I mean, can
I'm
you?
I'm very sensitive to the outgassing of the plastic.
Okay.
I don't even know how much it is. I feel better hearing that you think it's even shorter.
I think it's much shorter than that, yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think that plastic wrap, the industrial stuff that we use in shops, mm-hmm. Outgasses way more than like the home stuff, the saran wrap that you would use at home.
Very interesting.
I always advise people at home to wrap their cheese in like parchment or wax paper
and then wrap over-wrap it in the plastic.
Yeah, that's what I do all the time.
But how can we... I mean, my big complaint is that I'm just tasting plastic.
You can't put it in wax paper.
No, I mean, this is always the debate. It's like, how visible do you want the cheese to be? It has to be visible for the customer to want it. And then at the same time, you have to aggressively face. We try our best to, like, build that into the prices. And, I mean, if your cheese tastes like plastic or garbage, it's not going to sell.
So it's in your best interest. It's in your best interest. It's like a fine line.
I'm always very, like, I try to slice all the cheese for myself. By myself, because I'm that sensey.
Me too.
Wait, you slice.
So if I'm buying cheese for myself from
his own shop, he can go cut his own cheese.
I will just go cut my own cheese and aggressively face it.
Okay, but you don't do that behind the counter for other people.
I 100% face before I taste to customers. Right. And you can usually tell like. There's a certain kind of shiny quality that the paste has that you can either cut off or scrape off, and then you can always just smell it or taste it as well.
Are some cheeses less receptive to plastic than others?
Yes.
And which categories?
It's not super consistent. I find that cheeses that have more fat tend to absorb
they
more
absorb
plastic.
They absorb it more. Oh, it's a stronger flavor. So it's like soft
what
cheeses.
What about a Gouda? Are they safe?
Well, it depends, because cheeses that are out at room temperature also tend to take that
more
aggressively.
So if you put your Goudas on top, then
what's his name?
They might suffer.
Pat from Cheese Science. What's his last name? Pat
Pawlowski.
Yeah, he has done tremendous and interesting work on this subject, both with the effects of light and heat and on that plastic taste and on the general kind of longevity of cheeses in plastic.
I just wish there was a product that was...
I know.
I wish somebody was innovating on this issue.
Yeah. That because it doesn't taste.
I so think like it's, Ovteen, do you know, are you familiar with Ovteen?
No.
It's a... I think Fromage X makes it, maybe. I don't remember who exactly manufactures it.
Is it more expensive?
Well, give me a second. So we buy it from Mark at Formaticum, and it's it has a funny... It's a sort of stretchy... Kind of looks like wax. It's not see-through.
Oh, yeah.
But it does hold cheese extremely well, inhibits microbial growth and fungal growth, and does not outgas.
So you use it for your backstock, like your cut half
wheels? Yeah, it's really good for that.
Mm-hmm. That's nice. I'm going to give a charge...
Outgas is the name of the term.
I mean, that's what I think... We commonly use at the counter.
Mm-hmm. I know in the mattress industry they call it off-gassing.
Well, off-gassing, maybe that's it, yeah.
What?
Like if you get a Tempur-Pedic or like a foam mattress or furniture, like different types of furniture has off-gassing when it first arrives.
Oh.
It smells weird.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess you're right. I don't think of that as the same as cheese.
I'm going to just put the call out there to our
listeners. I mean, I
eat enough
cheese, I will off-gas as well, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's off-gassing in all kinds of settings. This is an area where I believe innovation is possible. There is a problem to solve here, and it results in us all selling more cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing that, big corporations that listen to this show?
Yeah, or anyone. Or I think this could be a crowdfunded project by somebody who wants to make a product that
someone
fills
needs to
a
science
need.
The shit out of this to quote Matt Damon.
Then once you're developing your product, listener, whoever you are out there, let us know and we'll have you on the show.
What type of cheeses do you want to see more of? Since so far we've only heard ones that Diane doesn't want any.
Well, I will give a short answer and then we're going to break, folks. But in general, I always love to see more sheep's milk cheeses.
That's what I had on my list.
I feel like we've lost some washed rind cheeses. of all milk types, and well, I want to see more of those.
They are.
They're tricky.
Tricky, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had more soft, ripened kind of lovelies. I'm also really sick of Helvetica's as a culture.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to. I've always wanted kind of a chalky, rustic goat's milk cheese a la, I don't know, Clackby 2, a la Blanc Bleu, some of these like rustic French tomes that are just a delight. I guess Michael Lee is making a few things like that up at Twig, but
the rustic tomes are another one that they suffer from the plastic, and they're often not in great shape.
That's true.
Like a tome creuse, a well maintained tome creuse, to me is one of the best cheeses.
Let me know when you find one.
All right, on that note, it's time for a quick break. We'll be back in a moment with more host hilarity here in the Heritage Radio Network studio at Roberta's.
This episode is brought to you by you. Heritage Radio Network makes your favorite food podcasts. And now we need you to lend your voice to our community and show your support of food radio. Become a member today. HRN releases 35 weekly shows each week and is a globally respected voice in food media. But believe it or not, we're still a very small grassroots organization. HRN is powered by a small but mighty staff of 4 people and HRN's incredible hosts who volunteer their time to bring you the best food podcasts out there. Our hosts are experts in their field, whether it's food writing, mixology, culinary history, craft beer, LGBTQ issues, and so much more. And they're committed to making sure that the stories that matter to you keep coming each week. We believe that a thoughtful, committed group can change the world. So join us. Add your voice and support HRN by making a donation of any amount. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Diane Stemple and Aaron Foster, and our social media intern, Liana Kindler. We're tying up our fall season with an end-of-year retrospective of sorts. So let's continue. Oh, before we jump in.
Go on. Amazing. Well, you were telling us about Tom Cruise, and I said that you know, you don't really generally find Tom Cruise. I mean, I used to try to import it, and every time I would have to refuse it.
Yes, you don't generally find Tom Cruise in great shape in a retail setting, but I did find a piece this past weekend at Standalone Cheese in Jackson Heights, Queens, and I just want to do a shout-out. I didn't mention it before the break.
I don't know those folks.
New folks. Shop just opened in June, and their Tom Cruise is choice.
I will check
that
out.
Okay.
I'm going to go get some.
Get some Thai food.
And, yeah, go to Jackson Heights. Eat everything. Eat everything and take cheese home with you to eat later.
Birria.
It's a perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Momo. Okay. And enough. This won't be this could become a show about dumplings very quickly.
I know. I went to Fayol recently.
Okay. After the show, we'll discuss. All right. Let's hear it. What else? Should we talk about retailing?
Sure.
The retail landscape 2019.
Are we skipping a section?
Well, we're jumping around.
Okay.
Unless you have, you know, listeners, this is a all, you know, we've got a lot of things to cover here.
Should we talk about tariffs?
Yes, we will.
Okay.
Okay, let's do this. Let's go in order. What was your favorite pairing of 2019? Did you have a great one? Diane has brought hers to show.
I brought
but
mine.
Only one. It's just one item, so I'm curious.
But it goes great with
everything.
With almost all. But it really went great with on top of Rogue River Blue.
Okay.
What is it?
It is pear mustada.
From
Casa Forcello?
Mm-hmm.
Is this Everett brought this?
No. Trollinger.
Oh, yes.
Trollinger. Pear mustarda. The great thing about mustarda, which actually this relates to...
It's pear. It seems like there was a lot of pear brought to my house.
The cool thing about mustarda, I learned a lot about mustarda this year.
Oh, good.
Did you go to Cremona?
No, but remember, I had Bruno Gritti and Paola Cacciolare from Le Tamarici on air. One of my favorite episodes of the year when Michelle Buster was here translating all the Italian.
Oh, my goodness.
And I learned so much about Mastarda, and now I've been obsessed with it. It's like,
now, so what is it? I don't even know.
Mastarda is a, you know, it's sort of like a jam-like condiment, but with mustard. So it's got that, like, heat, that savory, that bite.
It's like mustard oil or mustard essence or something?
I think it depends.
Yeah.
But
I've been to Cremona in Lombardia, which is supposed to be the capital of fruit Mastarda. And you can, like, smell it in the air. Because it's, I mean, people, you can...
The mustard.
It's mustard gas. It's very strong.
Strong.
I mean, depending on where you are, like, I think there's always reports of people occasionally accidentally injuring themselves making Mastarda in Italy. Yeah.
Aaron, what was your best pairing of 2019?
You know, I hate this question. I'm very fortunate in that I get to drink a lot of amazing things because I have a lot of friends in the industry and I've been learning myself. I'm trying to get a wine store off the ground and all this kind of thing. But I'm never all about that pairing. I always feel like it's more about drinking. It's more about context. It's more about
what's happening when you're having the thing.
Where are you? Are the two things that you're eating cool and interesting and kind of vibing for you? And very occasionally it will be just that marriage that couldn't have existed otherwise, but that is just so rare.
It's such a good point. Food in a vacuum, the soul is lost.
I think people put way too much pressure on pairing as well. Yeah, we're very wrapped up in this.
I think that's true.
But if you're holding my feet to the fire, I had a lovely Armagnac with Rogue River Blue.
Oh, very good.
I'm sorry, no, the Armagnac was with Letivas from Alpe Tempe, which we got.
They would both be great.
Quality cheese, which was through their sort of cool, nifty Adopt-N-Alp program.
Yeah.
Which was one I wanted to mention earlier on the, like, things I want to see more of.
Oh, yeah.
This idea where they kind of find an Alp, a specific, you know, single farm on a specific Alp, and they partner, they buy a certain amount of wheels, sell them to one shop or two shops, and then you can say, it's from this family.
Right.
And they send you pictures and all sorts of cool things like that.
This year I took my first trip to the Alps. And now after going, I want to personally adopt an Alp. Like, how can I make that happen?
You know what? Fuck Switzerland. It.
No. It, yes. We're going to fight after this.
Because
the
there's Alps. It looks like it does on the postcards and it's not fair. It's the only country I've ever been to.
Are there Alps in Italy?
There
are. The Italian Alps.
I thought that's what you meant. When you said fuck Switzerland.
That he just prefers the Italian. Yeah,
no, I would take Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
but
it's ridiculous.
Dolomiti, the Dolomites. Not the Alps, technically, but...
It's ridiculous how beautiful it is.
It is. It's insane.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It really, really is. And the food is amazing, if expensive.
I don't even think it's expensive. Actually, the cheese and the beer and the chocolate and the bread that I had in Switzerland was the least expensive version of those things I've had anywhere. It's like they're rich in those things, so that's actually not what costs. I think it gets a bad rap for being expensive. I mean, you buy a steak, maybe that's a little higher price on the menu.
I just remember restaurant eating and drinking there was quite expensive.
Living wage.
Oh, yeah, there's lots to like.
There's a lot of reasons that...
It's pretty homogenous.
Small country.
Yeah, not
well, it's
super...
Swiss.
Jewish,
it is,
I guess.
Swiss.
Also, yeah. I don't know. I'm hot and cold.
Probably not super Jewish.
I love the cheeses. I think it's a beautiful country. And I mean fuck Switzerland in only the nicest of ways.
Yeah, I knew that.
You didn't.
wait. Were your pairings all going to be with booze?
I don't understand the question.
Did you?
Were your pairings all going to be with booze?
I thought you said parents.
Oh.
They were, yeah.
That wasn't what I was thinking of.
He's a high-quality booze guy.
Yeah.
He's got good access.
I'm a high-quality everything guy. I'm a snob.
Yeah.
I'm a horrible snob.
And that's also known as a snob.
Well, tell me what yours are.
This
she
one.
Brought her.
Yeah,
all right.
I brought mine. Great.
Now, mine is not a non-alcoholic beverage pairing.
Okay.
I've been getting really into tea this year, and I'm obsessed with Earl Grey tea. I'm totally in love with it. I can't get enough.
Huh.
I just love it. And I had the Earl Grey, I had Rishi's Earl Grey tea with the Mitti Crema, the sheep's milk cream that they sell.
And I like where your head's at. Very nice.
This is a delightful morning snack.
No, not poured in.
No, not poured in.
No.
Diane is mimicking pouring something in with a look of horror on her face.
Yes.
A little nibble of the crema.
Okay.
A little sip of the Earl Grey.
No, that's nice. They do a great job on Earl Grey.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We've discussed this at length before.
I think it's been now, almost 20 years since I've been enjoying the Earl Grey.
Mm-hmm.
I just bought a new tin of it today.
In fact, 20 years this winter.
Wow, it's your Reishi Earl Grey 20-year anniversary.
I remember the first time I tasted it.
Wow.
That's great.
It was over New Year's in Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Wow.
Wow, and you know that was 20 years ago.
It was. It was New Year's, the millennium, it's 2000.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you go, easy.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm.
Those are the kind of taste memories, that stick
with
you. Okay, next question. Are we ready?
Yes.
Cheese craze 2019. What was it? Was there a cheese craze? What was happening? Hmm. Is it still truffle? Has it always been truffle?
No.
I think truffle's ending.
Yeah, I think truffle's... I mean, people love truffle.
My customers definitely are still into truffle.
But it's not an anomaly anymore. It's not like a... brand
a novelty.
That's the word I'm looking for. It's not.
I mean,
shiny.
Rogue River Blue. I had a lot of customers who are not cheese people come in and say, "I saw this cheese at one." And I also, it was one of these things where people came out of the work to email me that hadn't reached out in a number of years. Were like, "I saw this cheese won an award. I hope you're doing well." So it clearly bubbled out of the cheese sphere and into the sort of more broad popular consciousness.
Did you have some?
I had a lot. I have some now.
Oh, great!
I don't have any now.
Well,
I thought we were supposed to get some on Thursday.
New York sold out of it.
Yeah.
In the week after the award. You couldn't get it anywhere.
I got plenty this year, so I shouldn't complain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe the craze is not a style. It was actually just that cheese.
Mm-hmm. We sell a heck of a lot of Alpblossom. People love that cheese.
Mm.
That's an Alpine cheese, sort of Appenzellery in nature with
beautiful
flowers on the outside.
Mm-hmm. And delicious. That cheese is tasting great.
We sell a shit ton of Brie and Latour and Humboldt Fog.
Latour, is up there with the truffle craze. I feel like Latour has a following that...
It's a cheese that people know by name. Yeah,
people know it. Mm-hmm. People adore it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very consistent.
It is.
It's delicious.
But Rogue River, I think, stole the show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Let's move on.
Great. Next question. Okay. All right. So now... retail. Let's talk retail.
I own a shop.
An uplifting tale. Yes. we have a retailer.
It's called
here.
Foster Sundry. It didn't know.
Let's see. Let's think about our best retail experiences of the year, our favorite retail moments and spots. What we want more. What do we want from retail that we're not getting? What's happening?
I'd like stores to not be closing.
Yeah. It's a tricky...
It's hard out there for a cheese shop. It's a very challenging retail time, especially in large urban areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, I don't want to say obviously. To those that don't know, Pastoral, a venerable Chicago cheese shop, closed this year.
A small chain of independent shops. How many locations did they have?
I think it depends on the time, but three, something like that.
Was it a surprise at the end? Or
to whom?
Yeah, not to them, I presume.
I thought it was surprising.
I think it's always surprising.
Yeah.
Even when you hear that shops are struggling, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the economics, if we're going to jump into this, the economics of small cheese shops don't really work in large urban areas.
The equation... I don't know how you balance it.
I mean, so just as an example, we're very open about this. Our cheese counter is I think it's 12 feet long. It's mm-hmm. it's a huge sort of footprint and
commitment.
And we put a lot of effort into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only about 10% of our sales.
Right.
But isn't meat what saves you?
I wouldn't put it like that. But,
but if the cheese is only 10% of his sales, then the rest of his shop is what's making the money.
Right. So if you're just talking, I give cheese a much bigger footprint than it technically deserves.
Right, right. Because it certainly does not.
Well, you should.
You know, we thrive because we are diverse and mm-hmm. we have a mm-hmm. lot of different things that different people want.
And you're the only one in the area.
Yeah, we try to do everything well, and I think we do for the most part do a good job of that. But it's hard, the regulatory issues, the staffing issues, labor, you know, you mentioned tariffs earlier. I think we'll get into it a little bit more, but like nothing goes down in price.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not getting a break.
No. Mm-hmm. And so it's a challenge out there. Most of the places that I think wowed me this year are not cheese shops.
You know, I noticed that about my list too.
I would say Archistratus Bookstore in Greenpoint, which is a sort of hybrid cafe bookstore ephemera.
I like that place.
Paige is amazing. Mm-hmm. She does a phenomenal job at curation.
She has dinners.
She has dinners. Mm-hmm. She has, you know, book author readings and talks and things. And I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on the show before, but her grandmother ran a small, like, Latticini Freschi and convenience store in the spot that is now Foster Sundry.
Whoa.
Oh, whoa. Neat.
In the 50s.
Huh. Good vibes. Earlier. Huh. That's nice
is
vibes.
Is that how you met Paige?
No, she moved onto my block. Oh. We only realized this later.
Wow. Huh. That's wild. Huh.
But I also, so Archistratus, I think, does an excellent job. Primal Supply Meats in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Excellent butcher store, really, I think, with the right ethos. You know, Formaggio Kitchen, I think it's always fun in Boston.
Yeah.
They always do a great job. I always go in there and see something I never would have seen before.
Mm-hmm. In the Boston area, Salem Cheese Shop just blows
me
away.
Of course, yes.
I mean.
Just recognized, right?
It's like my happy place.
Hmm. I've never been there. Well, where is it?
It's in Salem, mm-hmm. right in downtown Salem. It's a gorgeous shop. Yeah, it's called the Salem Cheese Shop.
Okay.
Where is it again?
It's Diane, it's in Salem.
It's okay. I travel.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, you could see it.
Yeah.
It's Bree Hurd. You know, Bree Hurd is the manager, the cheese manager and mm-hmm. co-founder, co-opener. Mm-hmm. You know, she came from the Concord Cheese Shop, which was so successful, and she'd been there for a really long time. But their team is so happy. Their team is pretty stable. They've got just an energy that's like infectious, and they're doing a great business and they're having fun. And I'm like, at least in the New York area, I worry that I don't see that combination mm-hmm. happening as often as I want to see.
I agree. I mean, I think very few people make it a career in New York, because it's hard to live, you know, at retail wages.
I really think that the next thing I want to advocate for in New York State, this is so much a losing battle, I'm sure, but is the ability to sell wine in the same space where you're selling retail cheese. I mean, part of why I think Salem Cheese Shop does so well is that they have also that category.
It would dramatically change everything, but
right.
I don't see it happening.
No, definitely not going to happen. I'm not going to really take up that charge. I have enough
things to do.
Things to do. But I do think that really handicaps the equation.
Yes.
In New York.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just about high rents and high staff turnover and mm-hmm. High competition.
And low margin items. You're not selling anything that's high margin in a specialty food store, generally.
Mm-hmm.
Not the way that if you would with wine.
Right. And wine doesn't go bad.
Yeah, yes. You have more time.
Yeah.
So,
perishables. It's a huge challenge.
Sometimes when I used to run retail shops, I'd fantasize about selling clothing. Like, oh my God, can you imagine?
Although clothing people
would tell you have to sell it during the season, probably.
Right,
so
right.
They have their own version of that.
Right, but at least with
at
wine,
least it doesn't
like,
smell.
Yeah. It's not, you'll sell it eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this brings us into like what makes a great shop.
Yes. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I think the prompt was something along the lines of what makes a great shop experience these days. And so I think we talked about this last year and potentially even the year before, but. I mean, Amazon is coming for us. Whole Foods is coming for us. Wegmans and Trader Joe's, they're all gunning for the little guys.
Well, on that, one thing to say about that, just since you brought that up, well, the interesting thing there, and of the ones you just listed, Wegmans, I think, is the standout in terms of actually thinking about the customer experience. Whole Foods now under Amazon is no longer thinking about the customer experience.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. That is
are
a
we sponsored
different,
by Whole Foods? I mean,
we are honest on our show. Okay. And I think it's honest.
There's no editorial
this is
input.
Honest journalism to say that the model has changed.
Right.
And what's interesting to me is that on the one hand, you would say in so many industries, you know, the customer experience has to be the number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
But Amazon has like redefined the customer experience, right? It doesn't exist in the store in the same way. It exists online and then Amazon's, at home.
Yeah, Amazon's methods, I think, have always been their sort of key value is making buying things easier. Making anything, just buying
the
easier.
The logistics.
Just easier. In terms of like predictive algorithms or shipping faster or, you know, automatic fulfillment, reshaping stores to make it, you know, put things that sell together closer to each other. Like so, that's, they're apparently analyzing Whole Foods
so then if
and changing
you,
things.
If you're going
they're
to a store.
They're changing things a lot at Whole Foods.
If you're going to a store, then you are, you're sort of acknowledging like, I'm willing to put in the effort to go somewhere. I'm not voting for convenience necessarily here. But with that, at least my answer to the question is like, I want knowledgeable people. Like if I'm going to the store, I might want some advice or I might want some information.
To my mind, brick and mortar, like small brick and mortar businesses, like I think they need three things that if they're going to survive the coming, you
apocalypse.
Know, big box apocalypse.
Yeah.
Right. It's the hospitality that is customer service, curatorial genius, like putting together products that you wouldn't normally find or come across because you wouldn't be searching for it because you didn't know it existed. And then just quality.
Right.
Because you can order a lot of this stuff online from InstaPeePod.
Right. You don't know what you're going to get.
You don't, you have fresh direct, all these, like, and you know, those products are available. Almost every product that we sell is available somewhere else online.
Right.
But the idea is that you'd come in and get some information, know that the product you're getting is in great shape, get to taste it, get to talk about it.
It doesn't taste like plastic.
Doesn't taste like plastic.
These things.
And so, you know, I think, and those are, a lot of the time that is, like, opposed to, like, cheapness and efficiency. It's just a different model.
Right.
Like the cheapness efficiency model is like a race to the bottom. And so I think, you know, the challenge is Amazon hasn't figured out an algorithm yet to solve those issues. I'm sure they're working on it.
I think one of the solutions, saviors, got shining bright lights on the horizon amidst the big box apocalypse is different models of doing business. This year we profiled B Corps on the show, two different B Corps. We've done shows on co-ops of different models, you know, member-owned, worker-owned, farmer-owned. I think that the places we profiled are all doing very well, you know, and there's something to be said for that, that maybe a more cooperative model or more human-focused business model could be what saves it.
Yeah. I mean,
but that's probably a different set of customers. I don't know.
Well, it could be. I mean, so I think the best B Corps, like, the customer doesn't even know about it.
Right.
Right.
You know, the other thing that annoys me this year is I've seen a lot of, like, what are they, eco-washing, green-washing, what I would call, like, small-washing. Like, there's, you know, I won't say the name of the retailer, but a large retailer, you know, posting a Small Business Saturday in, you know, Instagram ad. And I found that as a small business owner that's working with, you know, one hand tied behind my back at all times, like, kind of offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, like, what is that?
It's tough enough out there without these larger brands trying to co-opt, you know, values and badges of honor from, cheating from smaller brands.
Yeah. In agreement. I mean, it's a shame that it's so hard for, it's like you have to be so alert and so kind of hyper vigilant as a consumer because there aren't that many resources where you can tell what's what, like what's the real deal or what's, you know,
I don't know.
That's the tricky thing too.
Should we talk about tariffs?
while we're on an upswing.
Oh gosh.
Well,
I'm really worried about global warming. This is not tariffs. This is what I'm totally paranoid about.
This is
about.
Like your 20, well, what you're looking for.
This is just the lamestream media spinning your wheels. It's cold outside right now.
Yeah.
I finally
doesn't feel warm to me.
Started worrying about it. I mean, I'm late. I'm late.
You just very late.
It's not going to be your problem.
Yes, I'm glad about that. I'm glad I'm going to die.
Yeah.
You know, I'll avoid a lot of the bad stuff.
Yeah. You have a son, though.
Yeah, you do.
Yes, I do.
He's
going to
see
it. And
what
if he has a kid?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, then I have to start worrying all over.
Right.
But anyway, so I'm really worried. I'm worried about cheese in the future.
Well, I think the cheese industry...
Like, what are they saying? Like, no more cows?
No, no. But there is a big campaign,
there,
you know.
There
I mean,
is an anti-cow campaign.
Yes, yes, but it's quite misinformed, right? Like, yeah. I mean, obviously we're biased.
Yes.
You know, I own a butcher shop and a cheese store. And
well, you might be double biased.
Well, I do agree that people should eat mm-hmm. better meat and mm-hmm. less of it.
Yes.
And I think it's well documented that, you know, proper, careful rotational grazing and mm-hmm. grass-fed animals tend to sequester more carbon than they release, than the damage they do by releasing methane.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's an argument to be made there.
Right.
But I think, yeah, global warming will present a variety of issues for the future.
Yeah.
You know, and the tariffs along with that, this sort of burying your head in the sand about globalism and global issues is frustrating.
Yeah.
I think this is going to come up and more at larger industry gatherings like uh-huh. ACS, conference.
I was at Neil's Yard for their 40th anniversary.
Yeah, it was nice of you not to see me.
Oh, Aaron was there too, and you didn't see him?
She didn't want to get up early.
He told me he was there like last minute.
That's true.
Totally last minute.
How early?
Sorry, go on. I'm sorry.
Okay,
go on.
Oh, let's not get off track.
I totally forgot about that. Anyway. Great to be there, but now Brexit is happening.
Yeah, Brexit mm-hmm. seems like it's definitely going to happen, and that will dramatically change the industry.
And I had this misconception that maybe it wouldn't happen.
Right.
You know, that they'd come to their senses in England.
Yeah. I mean, the tariffs. So we should, I guess we've done shows on the tariffs, but some tariffs have gone into effect at this point.
Right.
And we're... You know, we're looking down the barrel at potentially even more.
Yes, and actually, listeners, there is right now. There's a comment period is open. If you go to the site of the U.S. Trade Representative, you can comment on how the tariffs are impacting you, your customers, your business mm-hmm. Through January 13th. It is.
Yeah.
So
I can say as a small. I mean, there's looming 100% tariffs for wine and spirits,
right?
Which would decimate. A huge portion of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you?
Well, French.
Yeah, French.
All of
Europe.
Yeah. Oh, right.
The entire
so
EU.
So not American.
Them.
So people would have to drink.
We would have to drink American, but there's, right. I mean, there's not enough American wine, and and the wine is very different.
Right.
And importers and distributors who don't just work in one part of the country, so they might bring in European wine and also sell American, but if they're not making the money on the European wine, they might still go out of business.
Right.
Mm-hmm. For me, like, we've seen some price increases on the tariffs. I think everyone has sort of agreed to kind of, I think the phrase is everyone takes a haircut.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of agreed to take a haircut until January. Mm-hmm. And then I think we're going to see price increases across the board.
Now, what does take a haircut mean?
It means they're
everyone takes less margin. Nobody changes prices. Everyone kind of ignores it.
Okay.
You know, maybe prices go up a little bit here and there, but the customer, mm-hmm. by and large, has been protected from this. We mm-hmm. haven't raised a single price mm-hmm. on customers, even though we have taken price increases mm-hmm. on a wide variety of cheeses. But that we'll have to reevaluate. We're expecting a raft of price increases in January.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of...
And will they just be European cheeses? I mean, will American cheeses...
That depends. Hard to say.
At least American cheeses have gotten better.
They have.
Mm-hmm. You know, across the board.
Yeah. It's a complicated subject, right? Like, you're right. Like, if demand goes up for American cheeses because prices of European cheeses make them unaffordable, then price will go up because supply cannot meet demand.
Then right.
That's just the nature of mm-hmm. macroeconomics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But... it's unclear what will happen.
Right. I think we're going to know more the second and third month of the year, of mm-hmm. the new year.
I think mm-hmm. you could make a strong argument that the trade war helps no one.
Right.
but it allows a Republican administration, I'm just going to wear, you know, my heart on my sleeve right That's now, fine. Allows a Republican administration to sort of claim points against liberal coastal elites that like, quote unquote, yeah. fancy foods.
Yeah. Now, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Our it's way of life is being battered.
Well,
what did Jared Kushner say yesterday? The blue jeans and beer party?
I don't know. I did not.
I've never seen tune either in. Of them drink a beer or.
Or wear blue
or
jeans.
Or wear blue jeans, but.
Yuck.
So, what were your favorite podcasts in 2019?
yeah.
Now, let's.
We've only got like 2 minutes left,
it's
right?
True. Oh, we good. Have only a few minutes left.
Now,
and
did you mean our own or it, others?
Well, it could be both. We could talk about our favorite episodes.
Wait, can I guess? Diane, did you only name your own?
I mean, that's yes. what she did last season.
No.
Last well, host show, Diane. And last host show, the question was even more.
Ambiguous,
and Diane came in with very specific episodes of her own that she thought were the best.
Okay, I'm not saying.
No, we want to know. We want to know.
My Neil Jord Dairy episode.
Well, that was a fun adventure
fun.
For you.
It was fun.
And you got to interview a lot of fun people.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it.
I actually, she had a lot of fun. Let's just say that. I got a lot of inspiration from two episodes of my own that were... Well, no, I've got more to say. But well, since Diane gets to say hers,
yeah,
this time
yeah,
I'm
please.
Saying mine.
Yeah, please.
But, you know, this year I interviewed the folks at Goodzur in Denver, mm-hmm. the sour beer bar that also has a big cheese program.
I like that place.
And also the folks who opened Daily Driver, the bagel shop in San Francisco.
Amazing
that's making,
bagels, yeah.
And they're making their own cream cheese, and they gave me a... luscious and glorious pot of brown butter ghee that I
oh yes
have.
You were just singing
I am nuts for it
to
I am
the rafters
you still have it
flights I have like 2 tablespoons left I am watching flights to San Francisco so that I can go get more but the but here's what inspired
See,
me about both those episodes
don't you wish you could just order it on Amazon
yeah there you go those episodes were both it was like young very motivated very energetic people going out on a limb and doing business in a way that was, I thought, super inspiring in that they were not only having great ideas
Unique.
And trying to do the right thing, but they're also Daily Driver paying a living wage in the middle of San Francisco, offering mm-hmm. health insurance for a bagel shop. And, you know, it's like I just got very inspired by both of those groups of people.
Okay. What were yours?
Yeah.
Well, I don't like to listen to myself on the radio.
You don't have to. It can be during.
Fair enough.
But we could talk about
my favorite podcasts. I will just name general podcasts that I think people should listen to.
Yes,
okay.
I also have a list.
I love
to share.
No Such Thing as a Fish,
ooh,
which is one that I actually saw taped live in New York about a month ago. They were on tour. It's a British podcast.
Okay.
They kind of give their 4 favorite facts of the week. And they're often sort of odd novelty facts. Like the John Tyler thing would be something
how...
you would hear
okay. mm-hmm.
on that show.
Hmm. It's not about fish.
It's not about fish. I don't know if you're familiar with the Stephen Fry show, QI. Mm-hmm. It's the QI elves, the people that produce that show, are the ones that do this podcast.
Cool.
It's excellent. Mm-hmm. Reverberation Radio is very good, which is just a short, you know, no words music podcast of sort of fun and interesting musical ephemera and novelties and historically interesting music. The Memory Palace.
The Ooh. Memory Palace.
Yeah, the Memory Palace is really
good.
Great.
What's
Very
that about?
Very short, really descriptive, really literate, retellings. Let's say of a particular kind of moment or historical event or discovery or it's quite personal and it feels like someone just telling a rapt story in a quiet room to you.
Wow, that sounds
now,
fun.
Now, when do you listen to podcasts?
I don't really listen to podcasts. No, I'm just
you have a good collection.
In the car, I usually save them up and I listen to 2 or 3.
Okay.
I drive to work. So it's,
you drive to work. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Mine probably are the same that they are very similar to what I've said in the past. There are a couple of new ones. My number one remains Death, Sex, and Money. Mm-hmm. I can't get enough of that podcast. I just love it.
Which is your favorite?
Which episode is my favorite?
No, Death, Sex, or Money.
Oh. It's the package deal
okay.
with that show. I think Anna Sale is
Diane's
the host.
No,
is She's just, their whole team does a great job. I love that show. I also have really been loving Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Ah,
Conan's show is good, really good. And I love it because he does a little banter with his team in the beginning, which sometimes I'm in the mood for, sometimes I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But then, I mean, his guests are fabulous, and they're oftentimes people who've known him for a long time. Mm-hmm. And hearing about just like the history of what they've experienced together, and then they also talk about more current stuff is amazing. And then throughout the whole show, especially when he's interviewing folks who are also in comedy or he came up in improv with, they kind of jump in and out of just playing, like comedic playing, mm-hmm. which in this day and age is a delight to hear people just kind of like being creative,
joking
and
around,
being silly, and mm-hmm. it like makes my heart feel light.
It doesn't
and
sound
happy.
Like the show at all.
We're so serious.
We're very serious here on Cutting the Curd.
I think you should talk us out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is it?
Yes.
All right. Well, Diane, Aaron, Liana, thank you so much for a great season. I can't believe it. Another one in the books.
Yeah.
All right. Favorite holiday song? Traditional.
Traditional?
Go.
The Messiah.
Okay. That's very traditional.
It's a fabulous piece of music.
Like Handel? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Handel's okay. Messiah. Great. Greatest piece of music.
I have no ideas.
Okay.
As usual.
Aaron, you?
I like God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen.
Oh, good. Ah, very
okay.
comforting.
It's okay. jaunty.
Wow. On that note, I love it. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back in a few weeks with brand new episodes. And if you have show ideas you'd like to pitch or a segment of the cheese industry that you want to know more about, please let us know. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Cutting the Curd, or shoot us an email at cuttingthecurd@heritageradio.org. Thanks for listening, everyone, and Happy New Year. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.